So welcome.
Well, it's... You want to keep talking this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it's podcasting is, think Howard Stern, but with less midget and strippers. And
okay.
More just, you know, kind of and also not live. It's recording.
Right. Well, so. I know I listened to him one time. He had a farting contest, and that was pretty interesting.
We will not do that.
We are...
never again.
Never again.
No, you did it before then.
No, this room is too
small. Small room, yeah. And there are various points that might ignite gas.
The so ventilation is not
non-existent. Yeah, it was. Just not again.
It's probably a wise decision.
I will say, by the way, that these fake eyebrows look great. I mean, really, considering.
After you had to look Groucho Marx before, huh?
Yeah, the big Groucho Marx glasses with the fake eyebrows and nose. Yeah, they weren't fooling anyone.
Yeah, he actually grafted some of my spares on. So
yeah,
I
he
got
gave up.
Money.
He
I
had a full head of hair. He gave it up so I could get my eyebrows to
grow. Wow, so that's a part in the contest, did that, huh?
Hi, we are Buddies in Space. You are...
S. Michael Smith, and you are...
M. Michael Carossi, and you are...
Hugh Roland Howard Jr.
That's a hell of a name.
It is a heck of a name. I used to hate that middle name when I was growing up. I think, what kind of middle name is Roland? That was my grandmother's French, and they carried it over, so that's why. But when I was growing up, I thought, what kind of name is that?
Would they have pronounced it like Roland?
They might have put a little flair to it.
A little bit of French.
A little bit of France. Yeah. That name there kind of, I never liked much. Now I like it now because, you know.
It's distinguished.
Well, it's classic. Distinguished. Isn't that like a famous
To the Dark
poem?
Tower, the Child Roland King.
Yeah.
It's what Stephen King's The Dark Tower is based on, is your name.
Oh, is it? Well, that's a fine one
Robert
based on.
Robert Browning, I think. Yeah, it's a famous epic poem.
Mm-hmm.
And it was funny, all the times I go around, of course, when Howard Hughes was alive, that was a big joke. Wish you were him. I said, no, not anymore. He's dead.
No.
You know?
No.
I won that one, sucker.
Yeah, right. He can have his money, and I'm breathing air. But...
Yeah, he had some issues, too. Big issues.
Yeah, big issues. Big money, big issues.
Yeah.
More money, more problems.
Yeah. There you go.
A very wise poet once said that.
And maybe that's why I haven't. Not many problems. I don't have that much money. Maybe that's why.
Yeah.
You are so. So thank you for coming on the podcast. So for those listening at home, you are my father-in-law.
Yes, I am proud of it.
Yeah, I'm proud to have you as my father-in-law. You have probably had one of the most insane and rough and tumble lives of anyone I've ever met.
Wow.
I don't know a lot of people, so don't get too,
I guess I went through my share of adventures, I call them.
Yeah, you could say that.
And it's funny. Well, one of the first things that I remember, as I'm Wabash Road, probably 4 years old, Simon's age.
Mm-hmm.
And
you say Wabash Road?
Wabash Road over outside of Geneva. It's this old country road.
Yeah, Finger Lakes region.
Yeah.
Usually Wabash, that takes me back to like Tennessee and
because he's from the south.
Wabash Cannonball.
Oh, yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, it was a dirt road in those days and stuff, but
sounds right.
But you know, we had a clan then. I think we had five of us. Vicky wasn't there yet. But like I say, I was four.
So just to clarify here, when you say clan, we are talking about your family.
Yes, we are.
Just because of the southern
the
thing that,
sense.
Yeah, the
oh,
classic
C.
meaning of, clan yeah, with a C.
C,
yes.
Not with a K.
No K's. No K's allowed.
Okay, good.
None of that.
So yeah, and you have, how many sisters do you have?
I've got five sisters.
You're the only son in your family.
Oh my
gosh. The only male representative.
Were you also the youngest or something?
The second to the youngest, Vicky, she's 7 years younger, and I remember still when Mom was pregnant with Vicky, and of course I wanted a brother real bad, and she always told me, you're gonna have a brother.
Oh, that's rough.
And I said, all right. Well, she went to the hospital, and she didn't have one. I think I cried for 2 days, easily 2 days, and I didn't even want to talk to her for a while.
You spent 9 months letting me down, Mom.
I said, you said I was going to have a brother, and I got another sister.
Take her back.
Boy, I would have at that time, but I wouldn't trade her now for nothing, you know. But,
oh, Vicky's great.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we had a good time. We had a good time growing up. All those kids, you know, Mom was always really good about keeping us together, you know, and not fighting with one another. Mm. Little petty things, but nothing too awful.
Six kids,
bad.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. So Wabash Road.
Yeah,
Wabash
I was going. Well, I was about 4 years old. I'm watching, you know, we watch our parents all the time. So Dad, I watched him going down the road more than once, and his door was loose. He'd open it up and shut it. So I said, huh, all right. I don't know why, but I thought, well, maybe I should do that too. So I was in the back seat, and we had these things. The old cars, they had called them suicide doors. And they opened the opposite of what they do, okay? Mm. So we're going down the road, and I open it up, and it just sucked me right out. Yeah. I landed on the road on my head, and the car's going down the road, and all I can think of, they're going to leave me. It's funny, the weird things you think, especially when I was little, but my Aunt Dolly come running, pick me up, you know.
Got you weren't going that fast, I assume.
No, it wasn't. I don't believe so.
this would have been back when seatbelts were kind of an afterthought.
Oh, I don't even know if they had them. Yeah, if they did, it was just a joke if they had them.
No one's ever going to use
them. Who would use a stupid thing? So I went flying out, and Mom said I got a big horseshoe-shaped scar in the back of my head for good luck now. Mm-hmm. I said, well, all right.
Considering all the crap you've survived, I feel like, that might actually have been a good thing to have.
That was one of the first things. Mom said, I got a bunch of stitches, because where we lived then was a farm, and across the road was a big swamp, and all these frogs would come out at night. And I loved, just like Simon, loved these frogs and the snakes, and they would get down in the cellar, and I knew it. So I'd walk down cellar to get them while I fell down the stairs because I wasn't that big, gashed my leg and some broken glass or whatever. So off up to the hospital I went again. You know, it happened about two or three times getting stitches, and I wasn't even five yet.
Wow. So like a record. Is this isn't the house you're at now?
No, this is a whole different one.
Okay.
Out by Seneca Lake, more out between old Penyan and Geneva in a rural district, but that's where we always lived. Dad was a farmer when he was younger, and his father was a big farmer also.
That explains how he, just built that house. He just built the house that he lives in now.
Yeah, well, I had a lot of help, you know, but Dad was so clever. He was just one of those fathers that whatever needed to be done, he knew what to do, how to do it, carpentry, plumbing, take a transmission out of the vehicle, any of that kind of thing.
Renaissance man.
Oh, yes. Well, he had to. In those days, they didn't have the money, and they had to fix it themselves, coming off the Depression and all that.
And mechanically, things were simpler, too. You were dealing with the car computers.
I could even fix it in those days. Holy cow, forget it. I don't even know where the spark plugs are now.
They hide them.
They hide the darn thing.
You need a passcode, and you need a cell phone to get to it.
Yeah, and then a special tool, whatever. It's like, no way. But Mom was funny talking to Mom about the Depression and stuff, because she came from a very poor...
How old is your mother?
Will be 98 this August 23rd.
And she is the most lucid senior citizen I've ever met in my life.
I believe you're right.
You would think she's in her 70s. Yeah. It's nuts.
I get tired going. She takes me out. We go on Monday, and I'm tired at the end of the day. I go home and go to sleep. She gets me out.
She hangs out with kids all the time.
All the time.
That's the secret. That's the secret to youth.
Yep.
Listen to me.
It is.
10 years my senior. You need to hang out more children.
Yep, that's it.
Your own special help.
You get to pick up that eternal vibe from the youth. Somehow we suck it off, I think.
But your grandfather was like a very accomplished inventor, wasn't he? Like, it runs in your family.
Yeah, he did. It was Grandpa, of course, back in those days, things were so much different. But when World War I came around, he was going to college in Syracuse University.
Which is a big deal. I mean, going to college, that's a big deal.
Especially back in those days. Yeah. That was a big, big deal. And he was doing well, but he's so opinionated, I guess you would say, or so strong beliefs that what was going on over in Europe, he was very much against. So him and a lot of other students from Syracuse University signed up. And because America wasn't over there yet, he signed up in the French army. Right, not the Foreign Legion, but it was an American division for the French.
Okay.
You know what I mean? So they wouldn't take us and put us in the front lines, but he was an ambulance driver back and forth at front lines. And
Hemingway.
Is that what he did?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And then I think there's like 28 different ambulance drivers with his bunch, because there's a bunch of them. Died over there. I mean, it wasn't like a cake job.
Oh, yeah. Well, there's bombings.
Good bombings, the artillery, you name it, was going on out there. And then at the time, he went over there so early. I remember I was talking to him, and because of his education level, they asked him and some others to start some kind of paper over there, something, because the guys were so homesick, there was nothing to read. You could, everything was French. You couldn't read anything. they didn't even know anything about. So they started this paper, and it's still going, the Stars and Stripes.
Which I've heard of. I've never been in the military.
Yeah, for the Army. So so Grandpa was one of the founders of that, among other people. And they even gave him a little plaque when my uncle's in World War II. Uncle George, they said, "Are you Charles Howard's boy from blah blah blah?" And he goes, "Well, yeah." Mm-hmm. Well, and they said, "Well, you know, he helped with the Stars and Stripes." And they gave him a little brass plaque about this big, you know, that wrote on it. And that was it. You know,
send him on his way.
Back you go.
Back you go. Yep.
Yep. Back into World War II you go. And he was a photographer, Uncle George, a lot. Well, he at least took a lot of pictures. And he brought those back home. And you could see the destruction and, you know, all the things that you do see anyways. But he had it firsthand. And, you know, he was right there. But like I say, a lot of my relatives, ever since the Revolutionary War, we've had somebody in the conflicts from it. I've got what they call the mustered out papers from I forgot how many great-grandfathers there was, Thomas, from the Civil War. He was in the Union, but after you're done, they write you papers. You know, it's muster out, they call it.
And like honorable discharge kind of
right,
thing?
Right, it's honorable, so they know he did his service, and I've got that home, you know. So it's pretty cool. And like I say, all my relatives, a lot of my relatives been in the military, and I always wanted to be in the military until I got smart enough to realize they shoot at you, and I'm allergic to bullets. I found out they hurt.
A lot of allergy,
huh? I definitely want to get into that part of your life.
Oh, that part.
But your grandfather also, you didn't invent something to do with cars?
Yeah.
With the inside paint or something? The beige color that is in a lot of cars? You invented that or something?
Yeah, there's
random?
Some basic color, like you say, and that they use for a lot of their different dyes. And they would give him a car every 2 or 3 years, the General Motors, because of
just
what he
free,
did.
Just a new car.
Because that was part of the deal he made. Grandpa was pretty sly. He was very good in the stock markets. He was very smart. Wow. Lost a lot in the stock market, but he got it back.
Huh.
And then he bought real estate, which was always a good idea. And it worked fine. And
it was.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. But Grandpa was very accomplished, but very much a disciplinarian.
Very strict.
Oh, very
strict.
Your
dad was like that, too.
Yeah. And according to Mom, Dad was like a cupcake compared to Grandpa.
Wow.
And
old
school. I could almost see that. So Mom told me one time that when they were first married, before they had any children, Dad decided to go down to Virginia. Grandpa was down there then. And wanted to just go visit him, surprise visit, see their mom and pa. So Dad and Mom hopped in the car, went down, saw Grandpa in Virginia. And as soon as Grandpa saw Dad, he goes, "Did you get your license yet?" Because in those days, you didn't have to necessarily, but you're supposed to.
Right.
Dad goes, "Well, no." He goes, "Turn right around and you go back home." He let him go in the house. He made him go right back to New York.
From Virginia.
I think, geez.
And your poor mother just was in the car.
Was in the car. You couldn't say anything. Grandpa, that was the word. Wow. If he said it, that was the way it was. Of course, his wife being from France, she would never say anything.
Right.
She would say nothing. And but he was, he was quite the taskmaster.
Jeez.
So, but I mean, it's such a different era. And then that time Dad was saying how strict he was. Dad did something. Grandpa said, "If you do whatever it was that he did, I'm going to kick your butt all the way up the street." He didn't. So Grandpa did. He grabbed the stick and he went all the way up the street where he lived, all the way up until he got to his house.
I hope it was a short street.
Nice. Oh my gosh! I guess. But that's, you know, that's just the way that their mindset was in those days. You know,
well, children are supposed to be seen, not heard.
And that was the way it was in our table.
And that was actually, so this is an interesting thing. So I studied sociology. So I have utterly useless college degrees. theater and sociology, or dual degree in burger flipping, as I call it. But one thing, it was an interesting fact that I gleaned, was that the concept of adolescence is very recent. It's only in about the 40s that kids, the wealthier kids, stop going from being a child to working in a factory.
Mm-hmm.
Like that middle ground of development and, you know, to turn into like teenage angst and ennui. That's very, in the grand scheme of things, very recent.
See.
So back then, yeah, the kids were just, you're just a little adult. And one day you just were an adult.
That was it. And you had to be as perfect as you could humanly be without them killing you. Jeez.
Snowpiercer. Little hands.
But, yeah, no. Well, the depression I was going to tell you about Mom, too, because her family was so poor, and Grandpa had left my grandmother, and there was five children in their family. And, of course, in those days, it was really rough. So she was all by herself. But when they had the depression, Mom said, you know, we didn't even know it. It didn't change our habits.
You were so poor.
They were so poor. They didn't. It's like Mennonites when electric goes out. They don't know. You know? It's like, oh, it did?
Oh, is the electric out? Oh, yeah. I know.
Yeah, if you were, especially if you were in a very rural area. Yeah, because so much of the, you know, the people who were, you know, hit by it would be in the cities.
Yeah, and it's something you think about all that she went through. Like I say, she's going to be 98. It just blows me away.
Yeah, she got shot in the leg when she was a little girl.
Her and her sister, little boy, they were
straight up little kid playing with a gun, like quintessential kid
loaded
gun
in the house. But in those days, it was like, what good's a gun if it's not loaded? You know, a little different thinking in those days. Of course, they know how to handle it in those days. But he was just a little guy,
right.
5 or 6 years old, a little older than Simon, and so he just grabs a gun and. And shoots my mother through the leg, and then hits my aunt. It was right next to her, and got her too. Got 2-1.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah, it got a little lead poisoning that day.
So speaking of injuries, so to go back, so you started out with a U-shaped scar after falling out of a car at the age of 4.
Yeah.
And then by the time you were 5, you had multiple stitches falling down the stairs. But you have collected a ridiculous fucking number of injuries over the years.
I seem to have. I don't know. I don't think much about them, but...
Well, what are some of the biggest injuries you've had? Because you worked construction, you played rugby, you were on the lam.
You got all your fingers, so...
I do have all my digits.
His father didn't.
Yeah, that dad couldn't get World War II because his trigger finger was cut off in the washing machine,
oh
you know?
Gosh.
Yeah.
But that's, he would tell everyone a different story, right?
He would tell
it. No one actually knows the story of how he lost it, because he told every single person in the family a different story of how he lost it.
For years, I didn't know. I had to ask Mom, because Dad liked to embellish. And so
it's weird, because by the time I met this guy, he barely talked. He just sit in his recliner, kind of glare at you. So this guy was an embellisher. Right.
Oh yeah, oh big time. Oh, he would come up fantastic stories. Come home, and after a while, you know, Mom of course wouldn't believe a word come out of his mouth. You know, and one thing she loathed is a liar.
Oh jeez.
Which I got a lot of whippings because, I mean, if I just said a little lie, a white lie, it's a lie. Boom, 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 boom. I thought, okay.
Those don't count as injuries, though.
No, that was just kind of self-inflicted, right. Self-inflicted.
No stitches doesn't count.
Right.
Yeah, Phil, no. And she never did give me stitches, but she did have this one method that really was effective. We used to have a washing machine, the old roller type, you know, you stick your clothes through and then squash it to get the water out. And they had a discharge hose, it was about yay thick, you know, to discharge that water.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, she had broken every wooden spoon and anything, drumsticks and things she'd get her hand on. And so she finally grabbed that hose and she would whap me right in the back of the legs,
ouch.
You know. That'd get me dancing, get my attention. Pow, pow. I'd go, because usually I knew I'd get in trouble, but I always thought, well, the pain will go away after a while, and it did. But this one lasted
longer.
When
you're getting lashed.
that one was a little bit different. That really got my attention. And then poor Charmaine got it one time. She took it for me.
Oh, really?
She's my third youngest sister. She's my third.
Okay.
Fourth, sorry.
You got to think about that.
Yeah, I did. Oh, my gosh.
He's got the fingers out. He's counting.
I got to. Well, I used to get mad at him. I'd say the wrong name until I get the right name. Linda, Charmaine, Michelle, Jerry, Vicky. You know, I'd go through them all. But.
It took me like maybe 5 years before I think if you were to put them in a lineup, I could name all of my aunt-in-laws. It's too many. And I met them all at the fucking 50,000-person family gathering. I'm like, oh, my God. Shit at names normally. This is not fair.
No, it's not fair. And I don't
even know. And they like to quiz
me.
You know, they like to quiz me, right? They like to fuck with me.
Yeah.
They're like, oh, hi, Mike. Which aunt am I? I'm like, oh, God. Linda?
Give me a clue. What letter? I'm that way with my nieces and nephews, or my great nieces.
Everyone's got a million kids in your family.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, that is a crazy deal. And then when I look at Mom, I say, geez, you got over 100? That seems impossible.
100 grandkids? Oh, just grandkids.
Great grandkids, grandkids, you know, the whole thing.
Everything after her. Her progeny. Her line.
Her over 100. Over 100. Oh, my gosh. Well, I was telling where I get my hearing aids, the gal knows Mom. She was asking how she was. I said, she's doing really good. And I told her about the grand, you know, how many kids, grandchildren she had. She goes, you know what? Mennonite lady comes in. She's got 214.
Oh.
I said, whoa-wee. Mom, I said, you've been outclassed. Yeah, you're slacking.
So, all right, tell me about your biggest injuries.
Oh, gosh. What could I say? Was it my bit? Well, I did get shot that one time. That was kind of weird.
as it would be. Yeah. I got shot. That's kind of weird.
Not very pleasant.
No, it was not fun. And for a long time, we had to make up a story because it didn't happen quite the way we told everybody it was. But
cutting news exclusive.
Yes, this is breaking news. But I used to trap muskrats. Me and this other friend of mine, this Ken Campbell, which is another name I don't. But anyways.
What is a muskrat?
It is a fur-bearing, looks almost like a big oversized rat. It's about all you can really think of, but it's about yay big, but it's got really nice soft fur.
Foot,
it's got a rat
like a
tail
foot
on
and
it.
And a half. Soft fur, like an ermine kind of soft
fur.
Yeah,
that type.
Maybe not as big as a woodchuck? Or?
Oh, yeah, not as big as a woodchuck. Okay. About maybe half, let's say, something like that.
Okay.
But it's got very, very nice fur, and you get, in those days, we were getting $2-3 a pelt for them, and that was pretty good bucks for, I was only 13, 14 in those days. So we go down to this place, it's a swamp in Guam, and they drained it. The Army Engineer Corps came in and drained this swamp, this creek we had. Up until then, we had, oh my gosh, there was the bobcats out there, and there's all sorts of, the turtles, the snapping turtles, all sorts of fish, all sorts of game, and it was like a hunting paradise, really, and a fishing paradise. Well, they went and they drained all that swamp so the farmers could use the land. Which,
very, very rich nutrients.
Very rich. We call it muck. Right. Really loamous type thing.
Mm-hmm.
And excellent. So we're down there trapping this in the wintertime. They've got all the where they irrigated it to drain all the swamp. There's a bunch of laterals, we call them, you know. And then there's a lot of them that going east and west and some going north and south. The north and south ones were like the main tributaries that drained the swamp. So anyways, in the wintertime, you see those muskrats, because they would grow carrots and whatnot there in the summer. The muskrats would pop their heads up on a snowy day. They would eat something, they'd pop their heads up, and they would eat it like sort of like a squirrel or something. Mm-hmm. They eat it, you know. And so we after a while, we figured out how they got out. So we'd wait till they pop their little heads up, and when they come up, we whack them upside the head, and it wouldn't have ruined the fur. Hit them right across the nose, and break, and it'd kill them. And it, you know, it was a good way to do it.
So you were playing whack-a-mole with muskrats.
Yeah, we were whacking the muskrats. So okay, so we're doing that. So we each had a kind of trap line. So I was on one side of this creek. Kenny was on the other side, and I didn't have anything in my trap. And I'm watching him. He's probably 30 yards away, something like that. And he's got a muskrat in his. And he's down there and he's looking at it. And it's in the trap, but it's down in the hole. So every time he tried to get in there to get that trap out to whack him, the thing would come out and try to bite him. So, you know, it's kind of reminded me of a cat and a mouse type thing. The cat's all tensed up trying to get in the, you know, the mouse is trying to. So, anyways, Kenny's doing that with a muskrat. So I'm thinking, huh. Well, I was kind of a smart ass at times. This is a dumb ass thing, I guess. Wasn't smart ass, come think of it. But anyways, he was down there trying to get it. I thought, well, I'm going to scare him. We got 22s.
Mm. Yeah.
So I, okay, boom, I shot
right
in front
of him. Which
is
like the starter gun for kids. I mean, where I used to live. Like, yeah. I went around 22 with a 22 caliber.
Yeah, I mean,
yeah.
You got to watch it.
It's a good step up from a BB gun. But, right.
Yeah.
You know, it's still.
But it's
not a shotgun or a 30.
No, it's nothing heavy duty. So I did the, I shot in front of him, all the ice, I hit it, and it was, you know, of course, I'm a good shot. All went in his face, you know, all this ice and stuff, and he got scared. He turned around, aimed the gun right at my head. Whoa. And then he went down and went pow, and boom, he shot me right through the foot. And I jumped up in the air. I go, ow, Kenny, you shot me. He goes, no, I didn't. I go, yes, you did. You shot me. He goes, I did not. I go, look at the blood coming out of my boot. You did. He goes, that's muskrat blood. I go, so I had to take my boot off and show him that my sock was filled with blood. He goes, I shot you. I go, you shot me. So here we are. We're kind of out in the woods a little bit. He goes, well, I'll carry you. I'll carry you. I go, oh, I can walk. I'm okay, you dummy.
I'd have been like, carry me, Jared. Carry me.
I think it's such a lousy shot, you. And so we're going through Gorm, and it was a Friday the 13th, happened to be, matter of fact. It was Friday the 13th. Oh, and we're going through Gorm, and Gorm, in those days, all the kids went to one school, and we had a place downtown called Nino's. We all go there after the school was out. And so there's kids out walking up and down the sides. And so I got my foot out. And then we got a town doctor, Dr. Mills, is where I was going. So I got my foot out the window, and I'm yelling to everybody, Campbell shot me! Campbell shot me!
And just bloody foot's hanging out.
And I thought, oh, what the heck? You know, I might have some fun with it. So so I did. We went up there, and Doc Mills, he looks at me, you know, goes, whoa. Yeah, he did. Yeah, okay. Well, he happened to be at our school where we had Hunter's training course. Dr. Mills was the one that taught it. So in our basement, we bring guns to go to Gorm. I mean, that's what we did in those days to do our Hunter's training course.
Do you bring guns to school?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. And also, when we want to go pheasant hunting, we take them, as long as it's in a gun case, take them on a school bus and go to a friend's house and go hunting. I mean, everybody did it. I mean, that was just common practice. Isn't that crazy now? But anyways, so he would tell every hunting class after that, he goes, I've never had any problems with any of my students, except for one, that Kenny Campbell shot that poor Hugh Howard. And he would tell every class. I thought, well, that's good. Okay, that's
he left
cool.
out that other part about you. He ice blinding your friend.
Yeah, see, what we told authorities, because it's illegal to shoot people, we found out. And, I was out of season.
I wonder if everyone else knows that.
Yeah, well, you know, in the country, they get a little mixed up at what to shoot. And but I was out of season. I know that. So we went up to, what was the name? Scottsville up here in Rochester. Mm-hmm. And I had to go, have a hearing for the judge and all that. And so I get there and the prosecuting attorney, we didn't have any attorneys ourselves. It's just Mom and I and Kenny went up there, and I guess his parents. And so they sat there. What happened? The story we said was, okay, I was down on the bottom of this drainage ditch, and Kenny was up there, and I was getting some out of the trap. He came down to help me. When he did, he fell, and his gun was an old gun, didn't have a safe, and it went off. And that's how I got shot. You know, and that was the story that we told everybody.
Well, if you're both, I mean, the shooter and the shootee, you're both telling the same story. We were
good to go.
Yeah, no one's really going to be able to prove anything otherwise.
No, so. And we wouldn't change our story, you know. And then at the hearing, the one lawyer, the prosecuting lawyer, goes, are you sure he didn't shoot you because he got more muskrats than you? You know, he's trying to... Right. You know, I go, no, he's my best friend. There was an accident. He took his hunting license away for a year just because, you know.
Slap on the
wrist. I was out of season. He's not supposed to do that. but for so long, I told that story for so long, I almost started believing it.
That's funny. You know? That's how it works, though.
But yeah, and I finally told Mom what happened just a couple years ago.
Yeah. Mom, you're in your 90s now. Yeah. I think you can handle I think you can handle the truth.
I said, well, Mom, maybe you ought to know the real story.
I just got to clear the air. It's been eating me up inside.
The rest of the story.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was that injury then.
Did you do a lot of hunting when you were a kid, Mike?
No.
Well, you're in Tennessee or whatever.
Was in Arkansas.
Yeah, even better.
No, I didn't. I didn't.
Didn't monkey with too much of the outdoor stuff.
No, I had a BB gun. I didn't actually shoot. I tried to shoot things with it once or twice, but I didn't have any luck.
Well, that's a beautiful country down there.
Yeah.
From what I mean, you know.
I was more like catching frogs and
turtles and whatnot.
Cicadas.
You know. In of course, overalls with no socks and no shirt, right?
Cause like Tom Sawyer?
No, that's, it was in the suburbs, man. Okay, well, part of the time I was in the suburbs, but I wasn't quite that that hillbilly-ish, I guess would be a good word.
I've been for years on this podcast. I've been making fun of it.
What was the biggest river near next? I mean, like was it Mississippi over that way? What's over that way?
We were, you know, like Mississippi Delta-ish area, you know, and like not far the Delta, but we were on the in Arkansas and Blyville, and it was the. The very northeasternmost part of the state.
Hmm.
So we're close to the Mississippi, but not, you know, close enough to get to it.
Oh, okay.
It was just flat. It was flat, and we had cotton fields all around. Hmm. And
tornadoes?
Yeah, we had a couple tornadoes go through there.
Wow, well, no wonder the floods devastated so bad if it's being so flat then down through there.
These
recent floods.
Yeah, when... my wife and I went down there. It was years ago. It was like 15 years ago or so. Mm-hmm. We drove down to spend some time in Nashville and then go over to Memphis. And I was going to take her to where I used to live in Arkansas.
Mm-hmm.
And there had been a tornado that went through when we were in Memphis. And they had us like all go down to the basement of the hotel and everything. It was a mess.
Wowee.
So the next day we tried to. I was like, well, let's just drive up and I can show you where I grew up. And it was flooded. Mm. And it was literally, you can't get there from here. You just can't. There's no way.
Like a bridge out or like a road was completely flooded over.
Yeah, because the roads are like at sea level, you know. There's no, when the road's flooded. Yeah, there's no getting around it.
Wow, wait.
So I wasn't able to take her to see my...
That cheaper, not that.
She was not disappointed from what
she was
more than happy to leave. Get the hell out of there.
Can we just go?
Wow, that's something else.
We saw Graceland, and she was like, okay, that's fine.
Elvis, got it. Done. Yep.
We can go now.
That was a highlight then.
Yeah.
So other injuries. Rugby, construction work?
Yeah, well.
Or just dumb shit?
I broke my foot in football. That was another thing. Got tackled about 10 guys and broke that. And so that was it. Done for the season on that one. So I lost basketball season with getting shot. Lost football with a broken foot with a victor. We just started football that season. We didn't know nothing about football. We're playing soccer all these years, and these guys would put these football plays on. I didn't know what they were doing. I hadn't a clue.
Roll. What is going on?
Well, they're doing stuff like handing to the second guy through. It's like, you can't do that. Oh, yes, they can. And off he goes. We were getting beat like 55-0, you know, getting crushed.
Wow.
And then I got crushed in that one game. Yeah. Uh-huh. But then after the rugby thing, yeah, I got into the rugby deal and got my hair pulled out. That little piece of hair that used to be there. The guy, there's a cop from Canada. We were playing the Canadians up in Victor that day. Mom and Vicky and some of the family were there.
In football?
It's rugby.
Rugby. Okay. I was going to say, if you get beat by the Canadians in football, you're doing something wrong.
Yeah, no. Shameful. No, and it's just the other way with rugby.
Yeah, okay. Rugby, that's
their game. So, so they came down from Ontario, and we had a pretty good team. What was that?
I'm going to kick some Hoosiers out.
Yeah, well.
Some what?
Some Hoosiers.
Hoosiers. Do you say Hosers or Hoosiers?
Hosers.
The Hoosier from
Canada. Not Hoosier.
Because you sound like you're saying Hoosiers.
I was doing too much of an accent with mango in my mouth.
All right. Don't do that again.
Well. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Go on.
And then, we're playing, right? And of course, I was a long-haired hippie in them days. And there's
you're a short-haired hippie today, though.
Right? I'm a short-haired old fart hippie. So this guy was a cop and a Canadian cop. So we're in there in the mess of things. And, you know, there's always what we call loose rucks. It looks like a bunch of mauling is what it is.
Is that the scrum?
That's part of the scrum. Okay. And there's a thing they call a ruck, a loose ruck, that's not organized, but it's similar to a scrum. So
is that where people die?
They come losing digits and parts of the body's may have got squashed that shouldn't have got squashed. Like, you know, just one thing you grab people by the nuts. Well, you don't know what you're grabbing. That many bodies. And you hear somebody yell and they find out it's one of your teammates. Like, oh, shit, I didn't mean to get you. But anyway, so we're playing that day. He grabs me by as much hair as he could and just ripped it right out of my head.
Stopped you.
Oh, yeah. And inside my head, it seemed like you're ripping a piece of paper. You hear it go, that's what it sounded like inside my head. I go, wow, what did he do? I thought I got kneed in the head or something like that. I don't know. And so we keep playing. And some of the guys there are yelling, hey, whose hair out here? Looks like a dead squirrel. I go, I think it's mine, is it? They go, yup, it's yours.
Are you bleeding profusely?
Well, not profusely, but it was enough, so it was definitely mine. And I should have saved the darn thing, though. I didn't think about it.
How many people get scalped and didn't get to keep it?
Yeah, you know, gosh. And Vicky and Mom were there. They saw that. Well, and usually in rugby, there's 15 on each side. There's only one ref. So if you want to get nasty, you can get nasty. And you don't have to be real cute about it, but you'd be a little cute about it. Mm-hmm. So when this guy did it, well, everybody, you kind of put a contract out on
right,
him.
Right.
So, all right. So
you can't let that go.
No, no. And this guy, he's a rough guy. He's a rough guy. So
he's a cop, yeah.
He's a cop.
Are you sure he wasn't a Mountie?
That I'm not sure. But he... And he had the ball. He was a back, so he'd get the ball out. So every time we tackle him, we'd make sure, and once he's down, he'd stomp on his hands. You kick him in the face. You go sliding and hit him in the knee.
That's for Hugh's hair.
Yeah. Well, that's the penalty you get. And then afterwards, we're done with our, you know, done playing. We're partying. We always drink like a cup of kegs afterwards. We sing our songs and things. And... We look over and there's the guy that did it, and his face looks like going through a meat grinder, you know, it's all swollen up and stuff. I felt good. I said, there, you son of a bitch. You know, usually I kept my temper pretty good, but that was unnecessary. And because he was a cop and I was a hippie, once again, we're on different ends of the spectrum here.
So that's one of the other things I want to talk about, because you have like crazy story. You were a legitimate, like Easy Rider.
Oh yeah,
like hippie.
Yeah.
They called you long hair, like you.
Long hair comedy faggot. I got called that more times than I could think of. Long hair comedy faggot. Get out of, you know. But it was talking about that when I was down in Florida back in '69. We first went down there, and we're in Daytona, New Samaritan Beach area, and we go and watch Easy Rider.
So were you riding at this time?
Well, we had a car, old car there.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we had old car.
Okay, so he didn't have a motorcycle. I made that part up. Okay.
Oh, no, I never had him. No.
So no, you're old, you're in Daytona, rider. You're watching Easy Rider. Yeah, sounds like you really should be on a motorcycle.
I get you there. And I'm afraid of those things anyways. But
they're death traps.
They are. And with me, I was too nuts anyways to get on those things.
That's true.
Yeah. So we go in there, we'll watch an Easy Rider. Me and my two friends, of course, I got the long hair, and I got a army kind of, you know, pull over knit hat type. Mm-hmm. They got a little rim with what is army. And so we're watching Easy Rider, and we're all, you know, we're into the hip part, of course.
Right,
we think everybody else is. So we're watching along, and it comes to the part where it gets at the end, and Dennis Hopper flips off those two rednecks and the guys in the shotgun. So they loop back around. They see Dennis Hopper again. They blast him with a shotgun.
Spoiler alert.
they blast him. I'm thinking, I'm bummed out. I think, oh, no. Everybody in the theater started clapping and yaying. I go, oh, my God. I said, guys, let's get out. I put my hair under my hat, pulled it way down, and we slithered out of there before they let out because they would have kicked our ass because they were all rednecks. I had never thought about it. Yeah. I go, holy cow, they're clapping. I feel terrible.
I'm glad to hear that Florida has not actually changed in 50 years.
No. They're still fighting the doggone Civil War. And those people think a lot different than we do.
Oh, yeah. When I was down in Myrtle Beach, I remember it was a couple of years ago. Well, in college, so it was a while ago. I forget how old I am. But yeah, it was the giant pickups with the giant Confederate flag. On the back, driving around, around the spring breakers to try to pick a fight.
Yep, and if you're a Yankee with a New York plate and long hair, that's not good either.
Well, especially in '69.
Yeah, they didn't care for that. Yeah, we got arrested in Virginia coming down on speeding charges.
I mean, not just pulled over, but arrested?
Yeah, they took us right to the jailhouse because of New York plates.
He's in the jailhouse now.
Yeah, I was in the jailhouse now, all right. And so we go there, and we follow them to their little jailhouse. It was like going to jail.
You mean you drive there yourselves?
Yeah. We had to follow them, and we didn't dare not to.
Well, yeah.
You know, because we're in their house now. Right. And it was a little place like, oh, gosh, like Gorm. It's just a little village. Mm-hmm. It just had a little jail.
Blink and you miss it.
Yeah. So we go in there, and it was a speeding thing. And we don't have a whole lot of money, but we go in there, and they had a display case. Maybe about as big as your desk or whatever. They had the different weapons they would take from the kids around or whoever had them. I saw all these wicked-looking weapons. They had like a baseball bat with huge spikes coming out all the way through.
It sounded like right out of The Walking Dead, man.
Yeah. And all these crazy knives and different pistols and all this stuff. I'm thinking, these guys are nuts down here. They are nuts.
Why were you down there?
We're going because we're leaving New York. We're sick and tired of New York. It's boring. We're going down to Florida for the rest of our lives. And never come back. And it's 1960. I was 19 years old. I said, I've seen it all. I'm out of here. And that's when I was down there. That's when I ended up getting this thing, that selective service down there, because it took so long for the mail to come around that luckily I had been there for, 6 months or so, whatever it was, before Nixon got the lottery going December 1st in 1969. And so, like I say, during that time, we were waiting and waiting and waiting.
Yeah, so you brought this over. So it's an extremely weathered envelope from the Selective Service. It has clearly been through a lot. I like how it says Hugh Howard, and then someone wrote in comma Junior, and then changed the address.
See, that's how long it took to catch up.
Yeah, and it was sent from Daytona Beach?
Yeah, that's where I had a report for indoctrination. They had me going at, what was this, 6 o'clock? These things are scary when you got these in the mail. Hereby directed, February 27th, I was supposed to go to be inducted in the Army at 6 o'clock. February 27th, 1970. And December 1st, 1969, just about barely 3 months before, is when they started doing the lottery. Up until then, I was gone. You know, because
the lottery invalidated this?
Invalidated, yes. This.
Oh, wow.
Yep.
Read what your friend wrote on here.
Of course, we're all into being the hippie things, and if he saw this, he couldn't wait to get his hand on it. My buddy wrote, "Get fucked, Army. They won't find the grass in here." And they never did. Yeah, that was something else. But that was a scary moment, more than a moment, because, like I say, all that night, we're waiting from about 250 to 1. From 1 to 250, from 1 to 125, you're going to be drafted for sure. You're going to Vietnam, most likely.
What do you mean, 1 to 125 what?
For the birthdays they pull out of the lottery.
The first 125 birthdays that
are going to go to Vietnam.
Birthdays.
So the first one they pulled out was September 14th. Whoever poor son of a bitch that was born September 14th, he was number one. You're going.
And they'll never forget that was the first birthday you...
Yes, it's like, oh, it's not mine, thank you. But I still had to wait and wait. We had 364 more to go. You know, so
it's like 100 games.
It's like Russian roulette is what it reminded me of.
And so what number were you?
I ended up, thank God, this is where I know there's a God and I was blessed, because 317.
Wow.
So I went to California. Sounds like a good thing. But these poor people, I mean, that's how close it was. I had some friends that weren't as fortunate. One was a draft evader. I wasn't going to choose that route. I like the Army. I always liked the Army and respect our country and all that. I didn't like what they're fighting for because of the reasons that we know nowadays. It's for DuPonts and all the rest of those guys making money off the war. Mm-hmm. Never against the guys. I was never against our guys, never against our boys or women over there. But that one that one friend of mine almost got me arrested because the FBI chased him around. because drafted invaders weren't looked on very, very good offense, in those days. Right? Yeah. It was a federal offense. And he was the friend that went to with us when we went to California. So they knew we were friends. So this FBI agent used to harass, when we got back from California, harassed Tom Fish and myself to find this other friend of mine. And so they'd periodically just pop in unannounced.
Yep, the FBI.
And then, okay, his name is Special Agent Plunkett. Plunkett. He's a Southerner. And he sounded like one. So he was out of Geneva office. So
did you grow up with him or something? Did you know him?
Not Plunkett at all. Oh, okay. Tom Fish was my best friend.
Right, no, but the FBI agent. So this
nothing
this whole
about
vendetta
him.
With the FBI was from
because from Dougie, because they were looking for Doug to find out where he was. And they would stop at the house in Gorm and stuff. And, hey, listen, we just want to talk to your friend. We're not going to arrest him. We just want to talk to him. You can tell us. I go, listen, we don't even like him. We don't even know where he is. I don't care. You arrest him if you want to. I said, I don't even like him. And so, well, they didn't believe me, of course.
Did you know where he was?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Hey, it's been decades. You can admit to that. I don't think it's a problem.
No, he's out in Illinois, so yeah, that's where he was. And so Tom and I had gotten a cottage down in Kershon, and we rented it. And we, of course, we were smoking and stuff. We had a nice pot plant. Grows right in this plant. It had it right next to the door where the sun come in and hit it. Mm. Well, when you knocked on the door and you looked in, you could see it. You could see it. Well, this detective, the inspector came down, Plunkett, FBI guy, and we weren't there, but he saw that plant there. And he said, aha, because this was in the days Rockefeller had just got all these laws, so we could have got thrown in jail for a long time just with a little bit of stuff that we had down there. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, it was heavy duty when he'd throw you in jail. So this is crazy. This is another reason why I know I'm blessed. So this FBI agent comes. He looks through the door, sees the pot plant, knows who we are, tells us we're in Yates County, which is the Penyan police area, mm-hmm. and tells him that day, I'm supposing all this, tells him that, hey, got a couple of hippies over there who's got a marijuana plant, and they know where this guy is, and now you can, you know, arrest him and mm-hmm. put the grill finger on him and squeeze him and make him talk. You know, so and they're all psyched to get hippies in those days. In those days, they would catch us, do something, you know, wrong, and arrest us, and they would shave our hair off. They got a big kick out of it. It looked like you.
I used to have long hair too.
So yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so we're doing that, right? So Tom Fish gets a call from his uncle, who's a mailman, who just happens to be the one that delivers the mail down there, which just happens to have the FBI agent talk to him and asked him, do you know, or do you, he said, worded this way, do you deliver mail to a Tom Fish or a Hugh Howard? And Tom's uncle says, no, I don't. And that was the truth. He didn't. But he knew we were down there.
Right.
So he says, tell Tom to call me back up. So Tom calls him up. He goes, listen, I don't know what's going on, but the FBI agent was asking about you. If you got anything down there, because, of course, we got the long hair. If you got anything down there you don't want him to find, you better get it out. We're thinking, holy shit, yeah, we better. So we did. So we got that out. We had some hash and some acid and some stuff like that, you know.
What year was this?
This is 1974. Mm-hmm. Probably 72. I'm sorry. Before I was married.
Okay.
Right when I got back. About 1972. And so we get all the stuff out and thinking, well, at least we got it out.
What, did you flush it? Did you
God. Well, we just took the front. We didn't want to waste it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Did you take all of your drugs?
we relocated those.
Right, right.
Relocated in a safe spot.
Stashed the stash.
So I've been sleeping in the bedroom, about the size of this room. You know, I'm over there and I'm sleeping. And Tom Fish is in another bedroom down the hall.
The little cottage.
In the cottage. And we got another friend that was out with us that day. The same guy that went to Woodstock with us. He was 14 when I was like 18. But anyways.
Because of course you were at Woodstock.
Anyway, yeah, of course. Well, of course. That's another time. But so We're in there, we're sleeping away. It's about 6:30 in the morning. All of a sudden, the door gets kicked open. Boom, you know, a couple old sheriffs come in there, and I'm naked in bed, you know, that's the way I sleep. So, get the fuck out of bed, you fucking hippie. And I go, what is going on? Get the fuck, yeah. And they go, all right, you might get my clothes on? Yeah, get your clothes on. Get in that room out there. Like, all right, gee, you know. So, they collect all three of us, and there's a couple detectives and a couple cops from Penn Yan, and they're in there, and they're looking in Tom's room because that was the room that he noticed the plan in. Mm-hmm. So they were really going through that room more so than anything else. So so we're in the other, in the living room, and we're waiting, and I'm
probably feeling pretty smug.
You're trying not to laugh.
I'm anti-establishment,
right?
And I'm very smug, and I'm feeling good about the whole thing. I'm thinking, you assholes, you ain't getting nothing from me. So we're sitting there, and I say to the cops, I go, mind if I play a little music? He goes, go ahead if you want to. Play cards if you want to. I go, all right, okay. Well, my friend had two nice speakers in that room that were searching real heavy. So there's a fire sign, I think it was Fire Sign Theater. You know, the Cheech and Chong, there's Fire Sign Theater. There's another one. Well, they had a little skit in there where you hear somebody knocking on the door. And who is it? Knock, knock, who is it in here? The police! And you hear somebody running down the hall, and you hear the door open up. And there's a female on the toilet. You can hear, by the way, she screams when the guy rips her off it. It's occupied, she says. It's occupied, and about the third time, it's occupied, and he rips her off, and you hear him flushing all the stuff down the toilet. So I'm playing this for the cops in the other room, being a real asshole that I am. And they come out, they're steaming mad because they can't find nothing.
Of course.
They can't find nothing. So
they're probably just as mad with the FBI guy, though. Right?
Oh yeah, because now he makes them look like assholes.
Yeah. Right.
Down to the headquarters now. So we're all three of us there again. So all right, Tom Fish, you come with me. We're looking out, you know, and they leave us alone. Me and Mike, they take Tom out in the lawn. There's a couple of cop cars out there, and they got Tommy against the cop car, and he's leaning back against it, and they're talking. I can just see their fingers pointing, and you know, and Tom looking. All of a sudden, I see Tom started laughing. I go, what the hell is he? What is he, could he possibly be laughing about?
Thrilled.
Yeah. And I see him hold up something. I can't quite tell what it is. I think, God, we forgot something. Well, Tom comes back in the house. Well, you look, and the cop cars go up and over. It's a long driveway, up the railroad tracks, up over the railroad tracks. They go, they're gone. Everybody's gone again. Thinking, what the hell happened? Well, Tom comes in, and he's still laughing. And I go, what's going on? He goes, well, you know how they had me out there? And they were saying, you know, you're in a lot of trouble. The FBI agent said, there's a pot planned, and we know you got it. And you better tell us right now, because you're in a lot of trouble. He goes, I am, for what? Because they had their the warrant for search,
right,
and they had
right.
that. Mm-hmm. Well, on the warrant, it said, for dangerous drugs. Well, they had firecrackers. They found firecrackers. That was the only thing they could find. So they go, well, because of this. And they held the fire. And that's when Tom started laughing. He goes, that ain't dangerous drugs. He goes, you're a search warrant. He goes, we'll be right back. You wait right here. You know, and we never saw him again. It's like, oh, thank you. But like, what's the odds of that happening? Tom's uncle delivering mail and the FBI guy talking to
him. It's small town syndrome to some degree.
But this is in Geneva. This is out in Geneva.
It's a whole other...
Yeah, and it's a whole different area. I mean, the chances it's just so minute. It's crazy. It's ludicrous. But it happened. And I said, oh, my God. We would have still been in jail. Who knows? You know, because, like I say, the Rockefeller Law was brutal on anybody. And especially that. But we said, well, we're not going to bother the cops with an illegal search. We'll let them slide this time, you know. It's like, whoa, we don't want to piss them off anymore.
Especially with the FBI involved.
Yeah, the FBI. And you know they got back together. Well, I thought you said they had a pot plant. Well, they did. Well, we didn't find any. Yeah. Well, you were, you know, I could just see them down there. Oh, that was a beauty. That was the thing of beauty.
Do you guys like this drink, by the way?
I like mine.
Yeah, this is delicious.
Was it too sweet or was it okay?
No, this wasn't too sweet at all.
All right, we always do a drink of some
kind. This is one of my favorites that you've made, certainly.
Ever?
Better?
Yeah.
Wow.
Is that a gin? You have gin?
Well, yeah, we...
They went really well with it.
It really did.
Yeah. So the drink... So actually, because you didn't want to drink because you had a long drive home.
Right.
I went online. I was looking for interesting tea-based mocktails. A mock cocktail. They called a mocktail. In the biz.
Okay.
Pregnant women in restaurants always have. Say, we need a mocktail for this pregnant broad. But you said you wanted tea. So I found, right away, I found a website devoted to tea-based mocktails. I'm like, this is fantastic. But yeah, so this is pretty much straight up what it is. So I just took, for four people, I took four caffeine-free black tea bags, made tea, poured in a can of Goya peach nectar.
Okay.
Cut up a mango, I'm sorry, not peach, mango nectar. Cut up a mango as well. Mm-hmm. Bought a little bit of mint and squeezed
it. Oh, that's what that is, that right there?
Yeah, that's mint. Put it all together, just let it. Jill, put a little bit of simple syrup in just to kind of round out the tartness of the mango. And then threw some raspberries in at the end. And then for us, I asked you to bring over gin. You said rose gin. I'm like, yes.
That's, and that's a good guy.
Did a toss up. So it was a bit of work, but it came out really good.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite gins. It's a rose. It's actually a liqueur, technically, I think.
Because it's an infused gin.
A rose infused gin. It's delicious.
Yeah.
Well, it's almost healthy, it looks like. I mean, when you got the stuff in there.
Yeah. So it's paleo. I'm good. Yeah, I'll put the recipe up on the when I post. So funny thing. So I've been saving this to last because I think it's a very funny juxtaposition to everything else. So Smike and I mean, looking around the room, I'm sure you can tell just exactly how geeky I am.
The fine geek.
Yeah. Well, yeah. By the way, Smike, I completed my Firefly set. Ooh. I finally got them out. It took me 2 years, but I finally got all of them. So the entire crew of the Serenity is in there now.
I like it.
Yeah, it's one of my favorite TV shows. It was like a subscription thing to get those. Anyway, so we talk a lot about movies and board games and TV shows. Now, the funny thing about you is taking everything that people have heard you talk about, it's probably a little surprising to know that you are fucking ridiculously good at board games.
I don't know why, but I got a capacity for it.
You are a strategic evil genius. Like, no one wants to play Risk with you anymore, right?
No, they don't.
So that's where Erica gets it from, huh?
I believe.
Yeah, but he doesn't get angry like she does.
Oh, she gets.
Oh yeah, do not play competitive with your daughter and then like beat her even a little bit. Wow, she will get so mad.
I thought I got that out of her.
Yeah. She probably just got used to losing you because you win at everything.
Well, she accepted it maybe more, but now, it's funny how that is. I just had this aptitude for this. Being devious.
What do you call it? Being strategic. That's strategic is a good game. Yeah, it's being strategic.
Yeah, I was very strategic.
But you're just very like I've played with you. Mm-hmm. You were not sober at all. We were playing A Touch of Evil, which is a fairly complex board game.
Yeah.
And you're like fighting the werewolf. You're like, oh, I'm just gonna roll 18 dice with silver bullets, and oh, he's dead. And we're like, what? Oh, okay, we just won. Thanks you. Yeah, right, game over. Game over, man.
I never would have done it if you didn't explain all the. I gotta have to ask you. Should I do this, Mike?
Okay, there was a bit of hurting catch because like you. Everyone was drunk, so there was that. But
you were assisting, though. But
you take to board games like no one I've ever seen. It's so funny.
That's fun. And Scrabble, I'm not that good of a speller, but on Scrabble, I just happen to hit those big numbers. You know, maybe I'll put two on something TWO, but hit that double. You know, or whatever. You know.
I'm not a great speller either, but I learned from your daughter that it's you don't need to be a great speller. It's about knowing how to use the board and also understanding how letters go together. And I lost to her for years, and I finally figured out like not to try to think of words I know and fumble over spelling them, but to just look at the letters I had and try to figure out, well, knowing the English language as a whole, how would these letters go together in a way that would make me lose points? And then playing defensively.
And defensively,
so stop putting a vowel right next to a triple word, because that is the stupidest thing you can do.
Yes. Don't set them up. Don't set them up.
But it's all strategy. It's not spelling
it
at all.
It is, you know. And then, Lippincott's. Playing chess back, of course, when we were kids, we played all sorts of games. Mm-hmm. But Ronnie, the oldest.
So this is your youngest sister's husband's family.
Right. It'd be my brother-in-law's brother.
I'm proud of you.
And I used to go over there all the time because they were very close and lived near the school. We play all the time when we were kids. But he was maybe 4 or 5 years older. But he was a very good chess player.
Oh, yeah?
And he loved kicking our butt. He did. He kicked my butt for years. Finally, it happened. I started beating him. And then he wouldn't play with me anymore.
I retire as world champion.
Yeah, and then I beat the chess champion in Gorm, which doesn't mean a whole lot. But
of a field of 10.
Yeah, maybe you are the champion. But I was the best chess player in Gorm at the time, and I did go to Peoria, Illinois, with a friend of mine who went to college out there to the university, Bradley University, and played some chess champion guy out there. And we ended up splitting. He won one, wow. And I won one. I go, oh, all right. Well, I guess I held my own anyways.
And
I
this wasn't like you didn't study the strategies and stuff.
No,
right?
No,
figured the game out.
No, yeah, it's just like I say, and try to set people up,
right.
and anticipate the moves, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, I was good at anticipating. Now forget it. But it was just funny. Certain things just come to me like that. But too bad I couldn't make money off it.
Yeah, there's not a lot of people really make a lot of money, and then if they do, they go crazy.
That's no, I thought maybe I could use those assets into the world of the booking. I go down to the bookie in Geneva. Don't do it.
No.
Don't do it. Yeah. It doesn't work.
No, because you become smart enough to know the game. And know that the house will always win.
Always win. That's why Las Vegas has got all those big, nice places. Yeah. So, yeah, I did this for years. And I didn't go into a whole lot. But probably I would lose $300 or $400 maybe a year by the time it was all said and done. And, you know, it got to me after a while. I said, you know, I'm not that smart. No, I thought I was.
If you stopped, then you were.
Yeah, I did stop. Yeah. And I pulled the plug. I said, that's it. The only way to win is not playing.
Right. Don't work play. It's war games, right? The only way to win this
That's
game is
it.
To not play at all.
And just play poker on Saturday nights. I could win at that.
Yeah. I'll never forget that I went to Vegas. So the one time in my life I got really into Texas Hold'em. I was in Vegas. And,
I remember
that. Yeah. Yeah, and I was like, just guys, leave me alone. I just want one night. We went with them. I was like, I just want one night at a table to like really play for a couple hours. And I was doing fucking great. And I did not know how to bluff. I'm still not very good at bluffing, but I didn't know what I was doing. Everyone knew I was a new kid to poker, but I was on a streak. And I had, so of course the waitresses are bringing the free drinks.
Mm-hmm.
As they do.
Sure, prime, yeah.
And I'm like, you know, throwing $10 chips down. I'm like, I don't care. I'm fucking rolling this shit. And then I said, okay, guys, okay, I'm just going to, you know, put my cards down, or I'm going to put my my marker down to hold my seat. I got to piss. And this old grizzled, like, old school alcoholic poker playing Vegas guy looks at me and he goes, "You're gonna piss out your luck."
And I'm like, don't say that.
What?
I don't remember that. I don't know if he told us that.
Oh, I did. Yeah, maybe not. But I'll never forget it because he was dead serious and he was fucking right. But he goes, like, he looks at me dead serious again. He repeats what I said. I said, "You're gonna piss out your luck." I'm like, all right. Well, I gotta piss no matter what. Went. And then lost everything when it came back. Could not catch a single nut. Flop, river, nothing. Couldn't catch shit.
Son of a bitch. Isn't that something?
All right, yeah, that's legit. I don't. So the moral of the story is bring a colossus.
Yeah, the bag.
Yeah. And then you'll be okay.
Wow.
I remember that, though, because I remember when we came to get you, you were like, I can win it back.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were like, come on, let's go. Really, and you're like, all right. I think you realize that, yeah, you just need to let go of that.
I've never been a gambler. So, like, I don't have that drive to, like, I need to prove my manliness by winning all this money back by losing more money. Like, I don't.
No.
You were a little bit like that, though.
I was in the fervor at that moment. One time I was in Vegas at a poker table.
Well, you get so pumped up, and when you come so close to winning, and you think the next hand, I'm going to hit it.
Right. Yeah. And the big houses, no, they just, you know, anyone rides it out long enough, their luck's
going to
turn.
They're going to. Mm-hmm.
They're going to get the money back.
Yeah, yeah. You're going to lose. But, yeah. No, I finally figured that one out. Stay away from those things. But
I play poker. You're your buddies. It's a good time. It's laid back.
Oh, yeah. Well, they're all friends and stuff. We sit around. We'll
I'm sure you win the pot most of the time, though.
Well, I do my share anyways.
Because you're just playing the people. You're not playing cards. You're just playing your friends with them.
Well, yeah. You know their habits. By then, you know,
their towels,
like,
and
like I've got my little change box type thing that I keep. I only use it for poker, and I counted my fold money the other day. I go, geez, I got $105, and we're only playing quarters at a time. it's just for the camaraderie of it and the social. I mean, these are friends of mine I've known for 50 years or more than that, because I'm so old. You know, it's older than that now.
I can't imagine that. What? Who? Like, do you have a super old friend, like a friend you've been friends with for decades?
No. I moved around a lot. I don't hang on to old friends, really.
See, and we didn't move. We stayed right in Gorm 1954, and I'm still in the same house.
Well, you took a hippie trip to Florida and then California, but you came back.
Yeah, to California.
you saw as much of the country as you needed to realize you like
Gorm. Yeah, and I thought, I saw everything. You know, went to Boston, went to the Roxbury section, and we were going to Providence, Rhode Island then, and we had the hippie van, and we were going up someplace near Boston, wherever you were, and there's a couple of hitchhikers. They're obviously hippies, of course. We always pick up hippies.
Sure.
He had a gal with him. He had a knapsack and stuff. He gets in there and introduces these other. He was Doug. I forgot what the gal's name was. And he goes, "You got any rolling papers?" We go, "Well, yeah. Why? You got some weed?" He goes, "Oh yeah." So he pulls out. He's got a knapsack on. He pulls out the knapsack and it's half filled with weed. and he's hitchhiking around. I go, "Are you hitchhiking around like that? We're paranoid to have a roach, you know."
How would you not smell that a mile away?
Yeah, really.
Well, they were hitchhiking. I mean, but he was long hair. I mean, everything. He looked the part.
He was asking to get caught.
He was. Jeez. So we say, well, we start smoking and strike up a little bit of a friendship with him. "Well, you want to go with us? We're going to Provincetown and stuff." "Yeah, sure." So he came with us. About 3 days, we went out there and poked around and did things in Provincetown like you always do. And then,
all the times I've been poking around in Provincetown.
Well, I didn't realize that community was more geared towards a lot of men out there where we were, you know. It was a lot of the gay people out there.
Oh, okay.
You know, Provincetown, the part we were at anyways. Mm-hmm. And not that we were looking for women anyway. I mean, well, we wouldn't turn them down, but as far as that goes. But anyways, we went through that little deal and came back. He said, "Well, let's go to Boston, stay at our place for a while." I said, "All right, sure, that's perfect. It's just what we want to do anyway."
He's got a bag full of weed. Let's go with him.
Yeah, you bet your ass. So we go back there, and he's got some friends who come in there. He's got a box, sits in the middle of the room. We've got couches and chairs. And from the moment we're there, from the moment we left, they never stop rolling joints out of that doggone thing. Holy shit. I mean, as much as I like to smoke in them days, we had to get away from them and just make up excuses to go someplace. Okay, so we did. And then that night, we're ready to turn in. We got our sleeping bags, you know, of course. So we go up on the rooftop. It's a beautiful, nice summer night. Mm-hmm. Look up there and the stars and all that. I thought, well, that's pretty cool, you know. We'll sleep up on top of the roof. So we did. We wake up the next morning, and I wake up, I look over at my buddy, I go, ha, ha, and he's got, like, black soot over his face, and I look over at the other one, he's got it, too, and they look at me, and they're laughing at me. Well, it was like the smog come down at night and settle on our faces.
And you're breathing that all night?
And all night long. We had no idea that would happen. So we were like filthy little soot pigs or something. So
either you stayed in the apartment filled with weed smoke nonstop, or you're sleeping on insect.
So take your pick. We went down to the weed thing again. so the next
seems like an easy choice.
Oh yeah, so we're sitting there, we're smoking away. And all of a sudden, the guy comes rushing, a big burly guy, you know, happens to be a Hell's Angel, and he knows the guy. Hey, and talks to us. He was smoking stuff. So then he whips out this big long freaking gun, looks like a cannon, puts it on the table, goes, "Hey, you guys want to buy a gun?" I go, "God, no. I don't want a gun." He goes, "Well, I just stole out of this cop's car. I just want to get rid of it." I go, "Oh, boy, jeez." These guys are nuts.
It's a whole other level.
They're nuts around there. Oh.
You know, based on all the stories you told us, it's not surprising you settled back down in Gorm.
Yeah. Well, I think I got a lot of that wildness out of me.
Yeah.
Didn't have any kids till after, in the 30s, of course, you know.
Well, no judgments here, but it's more common nowadays.
Yeah. that was a fun trip out there and stuff. And they were good people. You meet a lot of good people. The way we used to go around the country, you know, thumb around. I thumbed a lot in San Diego, but I had some of my friends would thumb from New York to California by themselves. And they would get rides. They wouldn't get beat up. Well, sometimes you didn't always have a smooth ride. Let's say, you know. Mm-hmm. I had a couple when I was hitchhiking down to Florida. So there's a couple people trying to run me over. This is, you know, got to be on your toes. You got to be on your toes. And I was right in Geneva. I was hitchhiking down through there with the arterial, and it's funny. These women go by, and of course, they either hated you or they loved you. Well, they hated me. So they go by, and they're yelling all these names, fucking hippie, fucking... And she takes her baby bottle and squirts me with milk. I think, what the fuck?
She was trying to give you some nourishment.
Thanks a lot. Hey, man, I'm done breastfeeding, all right? Oh, jeez. Hey, yay, yay. But it's just, they either hated you or loved you there back in those days.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
Speaking of those days and time.
Wow, you're...
We're over an hour, so we should probably cut it.
Okay.
But thank you so much for joining us. Well, thank you.
Well, that was very interesting, I thought.
I figured I'd just get you talking. It's fine. Yeah, Give me a little bit of non-caffeinated tea. we just got to do our sign-off. Okay. 1 second. So, we are Buddies in Space. You are?
S. Michael Smith, you are.
And Michael Crossi.
Hugh Howard Jr.
Was joining us. Well, no, say the full name, sir.
Hugh Roland Howard Jr.
That's right. Was joining us today. Thank you so much. Take it away, Melanie.
Buddies in Space is a Stolen Dress Entertainment production. Visit StolenDress.com to check out other Stolen Dress podcasts, blogs, tweets, videos, and books.
All right. Well, that was cool.
So, what did you think of your first podcast?
I'm okay with it. I had fun. I mean, yeah, it's just like, to me, it's just sitting around, like, talking to my buddies and...
Drinking,
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. It's just funny. I think about all the stuff that went on. It's like, you go on and on forever, it seems like.
Well, Erica gave me a list, and I didn't get to all of it. I got to most of it, but a lot of the stuff I was going to ask you about. But it's like, every time I talk to you, I'm like, you've had a fucking crazy life, dude.
You know what, to me, it seems like just normal as anything.
Yeah, well, sure. That's you, Hugh. That's you.
I guess.